So you guys need to mute your computers because they cannot. Okay, good morning. Welcome. Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us this morning. My name is Susan Himmel, and I'm a Health Promotion Specialist Knowledge Broker at PPCC, and I'll be moderating today's webinar. If you're having trouble logging onto the webinar via the Microsoft link, please call the 1-800 number for PPCC. The number is 1-800-363-7822. A reminder that you can also access your backup version of our presentation deck that was emailed to you along with our webinar yesterday, and a reminder this morning how to log in. We're currently recording this webinar. Please be aware that we will be posting this recorded webinar on our website in approximately 1 week. For many who are logged in to our webinar, you will see the presentation on your right. On your left side of the screen will be a chat box. This chat box is public to everyone, so whatever you write will be posted and viewable by all those in the webinar, as well as myself and our presenters. During this webinar, we will be pausing to take questions once both speakers have finished presenting. Please feel free, though, to enter any questions in this box as you go, and we will try to address as many as possible during the Q&A. Because of time constraints, we may not be able to get to all the questions, but we'll try to answer a good variety. Our first guest presenter is Roberta Ferren. Roberta is Senior Scientific Advisor for the Ontario Tobacco Research Unit at the University of Toronto, professor in the Dalla-Lana School of Public Health, and affiliate scientist with the Center for Addiction and Mental Health. She is training in epidemiology and medical sociology. Her research focuses on tobacco smoke exposure, including the economic and environmental impact of smoke-free bylaws, indoor and outdoor air quality studies, including water pipe and third-hand smoke exposure. She's published more than 150 peer-reviewed papers and has authored 3 books, including Nicotine and Public Health. Michael Chaitin is our second presenter and assistant professor at OTRU in the Dalla-Lana School of Public Health at the U of T and co-head of the Population Research Initiative on Mental Health and Addictions at OTRU. His work is focused on the social and psychosocial factors influencing tobacco use from a population health perspective. At OTRU, he's the project lead for the Ontario Tobacco Survey and is the principal investigator of a CIHR-funded study on policy option for addressing tobacco retail availability.
Good morning, everybody. I'm really pleased to be here, and so sorry I can't see your faces because I'm sure I know a lot of you. So Michael and I are doing this presentation on smoking on patios today. This is really Michael's presentation, but he asked me to say a few words about health effects and exposures on outdoor patios. How do I do this? Okay. So despite a lot of regulations in many different jurisdictions, significant smoke exposure continues in a lot of outdoor public spaces. Tell me what exactly to press. That's what I did.
Yeah, it has to be on the arrow. I can do it.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you may have heard of PM 2.5, but maybe you don't know exactly what it is. This is a standardized measure of small particles that are less than 2.5 micrometers in width. And it's used around the world for measuring air pollution of various kinds, including cigarette smoke. Cigarette smoke's not the only source of PM2.5. And when you're measuring on patios, there sometimes is contamination from diesel vehicles or cooking appliances as well. But usually, if you're right in the middle of a number of smokers, most of it's probably from their cigarettes. The reason we measure small particles is because those are the ones that get deep in the lung and cause all kinds of health problems. PM2.5 contains benzopyrene, which is a cancer-causing chemical, and many other toxic chemicals that go deep into the lungs. This one? So what do we know about smoke exposure on patios? Basically, outdoor exposure is more or less the same as indoor exposure, but it dissipates faster. It doesn't continue to circulate the way it does indoors. But you can still get just as much exposure if you're fairly close to other people, and those of you who've had a meal or a drink on a patio know that you're often within 2 meters of a smoker, or you may be within two meters of 7 or 8 smokers, depending on how crowded the patio is. But in this country, at least, our patios tend to be quite crowded because many of them are in downtown areas and there's limited space. I was in Abu Dhabi last fall, and a lot of the tables were about 6 or 7 meters apart, so the smoke wasn't as pervasive there. Based on research that has been done, experimental research, you really need to be at least 9 meters away to get no exposure, and sometimes even beyond that if there's a wind blowing, because people often think that the smoke kind of goes up into the atmosphere and disappears instantly, and this is not really what happens. Jim Rapace, one of the leading experts in the physics of smoke, describes it as rising and forming a mushroom-shaped cloud, like an atomic bomb, and then it sort of rains down on the people below, or if there's a bit of a wind, it might move over a few feet, but somebody's going to be hit with all these particulates and other toxic gases and so forth. So one of the ways we look at how toxic an outdoor environment is by looking at the air quality index. And the air quality index is very similar to the values for PM2.5. There's a slight difference, but they track fairly closely so that when you get up to the very poor air quality index, which is 100 plus, what's called the hazardous level for PM2.5 is 91. So they're similar. And even at levels below PM2.5, below 12, some people are affected by that. And as you get higher, you get more and more of the population affected. As a rough rule, anything under 25 is considered kind of acceptable, although some people may still be affected. Once you get up to 91, pretty well everybody's at increased risk. And this is for 3-hour exposure, so it doesn't really work for staff who may be working 8 or 10 hour shifts every day. And it certainly is cumulative, and we don't have really precise measures for that, but there are, for air quality index, there are kind of 24-hour measures and sort of goes on from there. So, and even very low levels, there's evidence now that even very low levels, if they're persistent for, you know, weeks, months, or years certainly have effects. So just to put this in context, you probably have read there have been a few articles over the last year on some of the serious air pollution problems in China and also in France, where you may find extremely high levels of PM2.5. The air quality index doesn't go above 500, but this is from a website where people wrote in saying what to do when there's high levels of air pollution outdoors. So what they recommend, they said pollution is hazardous at these levels. Stay indoors in a room or building with filtered air and reduce your activity level. So that's at levels, actually anything above 200 is considered very, very hazardous, and anything, as I mentioned, above 91 is considered a problem. Oh, did I go the wrong way? So what levels of PM2.5 are found on patios in this province? Well, what we find is that the levels are often equivalent to those that you find with indoor smoking. So we banned indoor smoking, but where people are still getting exposed. Now, one study from New Zealand, which is not Ontario, but they found outdoor patios, the PM2.5 measures range from 51, which is not great, up to 284, which is over a three-hour period, which is very bad. At water pipe cafes, this was a study we did in Toronto, the levels went as high as on patios. We did five patios, as high as over 1,700. So these were pretty toxic areas, and it all depended on how many charcoals were burning. Water pipe is a little bit different because it uses charcoal, so you get the tobacco plus the charcoal. And it doesn't really matter whether you use herbal or tobacco hookah. As many of you know, you still get toxic emissions. Pam Kaufman and others of us at OTRU were involved in a doorway study looking at exposures at doorways to public buildings. And these levels went close to 500, levels of PM2.5. So again, that's very hazardous. And some people are just walking in and out, but some people have friends who smoke and they're standing out with their friends or they're waiting for someone or they're trying to get a breath of fresh air. So you really have to go quite far away to get out of the range of these smoke exposures. So, you know, basically there's the same health effects indoors or out. It's not a different substance out there. It does disperse faster, but usually if they're smoking aloud on a patio, new customers come in and people have second and third and fourth cigarettes, so it doesn't stop. So really it becomes very similar to indoors. It's just that, you know, in the middle of the night, you won't find much outdoors, whereas it'll still be circulating indoors. Now, you probably have heard many times that one of the major Surgeon General's reports says there's no safe level of exposure. And some people may think that's a bit extreme, but what they found is that even very low exposures are associated with changes in gene expression, which can reflect early damage that is cumulative. So it doesn't take very much, and particularly for vulnerable populations, children, elderly people, pregnant women, people with compromised immune systems and so forth, this can be very serious. And even for people who have existing conditions such as asthma or heart disease, even brief exposures increases their risk of an event. And you may have heard that when smoking was banned indoors, the rates of hospital admissions for these conditions decreased quite substantially. So there's very good evidence for that. And we know that long-term exposure causes cancer, heart disease, and respiratory diseases, which are the main causes of death in our society. But the biggest problem, I think, is occupational exposure. You know, we had Heather Crow, the non-smoking waitress in Ottawa, who, you know, developed lung cancer after 30 years working in a smoky restaurant. And we're still exposing wait staff on out in outdoor places and actually indoors in water pipe cafes. And it's very unfortunate because a lot of these are young people. They're not unionized. They're not, there's no follow-up because they're a kind of mobile group and they go on to do other things in life. So nobody's really tracking them. But one of the things they found is an increase of only 5 to 10 micrograms per meters cubed, which is, you know, as I mentioned, 25 is generally considered a safe level. But if you're in a cafe that's at 200, that's about 10 times that. So an increase of that in average exposure is associated with a 3 to 6% increase in all-cause mortality. And that is, so if you're getting much higher exposures, I'm not sure if it's a exact dose-response relationship, but you're getting, you may get it, be getting a doubling or a tripling of long-term mortality. So this is a very serious issue for wait staff, and nobody's really protecting them now. And it's particularly concerning for young women who work in so many of these places because there's very good evidence now that exposure to secondhand smoke between puberty and first pregnancy is associated with greatly increased risk of breast cancer. So a few final thoughts. Wait staff and patrons are exposed to unsafe levels of particulates in outdoor patios and indoors, because some smoke can drift in depending on, you know, in the summer people have windows open. Sometimes they have these big garage door contraptions. And there are vents and so forth. So a certain amount of that smoke goes in. It also goes in on the clothing of patrons and wait staff. So they end up contaminating the indoor environment. And what happens when it goes indoors is it doesn't dissipate. And you get not only secondhand smoke there, but you get thirdhand smoke, which will be there for weeks, months, or years, off-gassing from walls, carpets, upholstery, and so forth. So it creates a huge contaminated indoor environment as well as outdoors. So the other thing is with some of you have heard about the new findings from the Ontario Student Drug Use and Health Survey that cigarette use is now not the main substance used. Water pipe, e-cigarettes, and definitely marijuana are more often used. And there doesn't seem to be much consciousness on the part of legislators that this is all happening and that we're going to have to deal with this soon. So given these health effects and exposures, it will, and social exposures as well as physical exposures, because there's Michael will be talking about this. But there's certainly, we should be thinking about bans on all smoke substances outdoors or all things that look like cigarettes, because it's, for young people especially, it's a place where they do a lot of their socializing. We're just finding out more about e-cigarettes, but they may also, they have probably have lower levels of toxic substances, but they do have some. And social exposure, because they look like cigarettes, is certainly a potential problem. So research is needed to quantify the cumulative risk of these brief exposures, and we need to certainly consider, and we are doing that now, but we need to promote implementation of policies to protect patrons and, of course, wait staff. So thank you very much, and if there are any urgent clarifications, we can answer that now. Otherwise, I'll pass it over to Michael.
Okay, thanks, Roberta, so much. Michael's going to take over, and while he's changing chairs, I'm just going to ask the one question. The one question, Roberta, that did come in that we could quickly clarify here, whether you think the levels of pollutants at water pipe cafes was higher due to the number of smokers primarily or the burning of charcoal?
Oh, it would probably be the burning of charcoal, which is very toxic, but it would also be not just the number of smokers, but that when people smoke a water pipe, they tend to go in and they smoke it all evening, whereas cigarette smokers, you know, over a period of 2 hours, they might have, you know, two or three cigarettes. So cigarette smoking is not usually continuous, whereas water pipe smoking tends to be.
Okay, thank you. We're going to go back to any other questions that people have thought of shortly after Michael presents, so we have enough time for his presentation as well as other questions. Michael?
Hello, and thank you very much for inviting us here today. So first I'd like to acknowledge to my co-authors, including Bo Zhang, I think, and who I keep leaving off this slide, and the Ontario Ministry of Health and the Canadian Cancer Society for my funding. So Roberta talked a little bit about the health effects of smoking on patios. And when we're interested in public health and we think that measures to reduce the amount of smoking on patios or eliminate smoking on patios will affect health in a number of different ways. And so the first that Roberta talked about was that health effects associated with physical exposure to secondhand smoke. So this is, as Roberta said, there's no safe level of exposure to secondhand smoke. The Surgeon General, this is an image from the most recent Surgeon General's report of a number of the different diseases that are known to be associated with secondhand smoke, from stroke to lung cancer and coronary heart disease. And this is really the primary justification for implementation of regulations of smoking on patio, especially, as Roberta said, for wait staff and people who are exposed over long. Is it muted?
No, people can't hear.
Is it muted? It looks like there's a light on there.
Yeah, no, it's not muted.
Okay, they can hear us.
Oh, they can hear?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so again, the primary justification for outdoor smoking bans is the prevention of physical harm due to association of secondhand smoke. A second reason why we think regulations reducing patio smoking is that they may change social norms. We know that the more visibility of smoking, the more socially acceptable smoking is seen to be. And we know from studies that have looked at the implementation of indoor smoking laws and other laws that have reduced the visibility of smoking that we've seen these changes in social norms in terms of perceptions and attitudes about the safety of cigarettes and also behavioral changes among smokers associated with these changing social norms. The third aspect is that we might think that these reductions those regulations banning smoking on patios may also encourage quitting for the smoker. That is, the public health effect is actually due to the reduction in smoking among the smoker themselves. We know that patios have become this place and have become taken on a role of a particular role among smokers. This is a picture that I found in the open access section of Flickr. And this title, Drinking Optional, Smoking Mandatory, was in fact the title used by the photographer. to describe the sort of the experience of being on a patio, and that the primary purpose was to smoke, and secondarily for a group of smokers was also to drink or to eat food. And we've seen this, that certainly for some groups of smokers, the patio has become a place in which smoking is encouraged and is associated with the act of smoking in the same way that coffee houses or bars used to be. And we know that indoor exposure is associated with some of these quitting behaviors. A three-country study done with the International Tobacco Cohort out of Waterloo of England, Ireland, and Netherlands compared quit attempts and success rates before and after the introduction of smoke-free laws. And they found that a comprehensive bar and restaurant ban, and here they weren't talking about specific patio coverage, was effective at increasing quit attempts and quit success, and did reduce the number of cigarettes smoked after the implementation of the ban. However, most comprehensive bans do not specifically identify patios. These are fairly rare on the worldwide context and very much less studied. But we do know, however, that with the implementation of indoor bans, that we see an increase in outdoor smoking. So this is a logical consequence of banning smoking indoors, is that smokers, of course, move outside. But we don't really know what the implication of that in terms, if that had, we know that partial laws are less successful in terms of reducing quitting and changing smoking behavior. And so we might expect that having places available in which to continue smoking as part of the bar and restaurant environment may also limit the public health impact of indoor smoking regulations. So our question here is, how does smoking on a patio affect smoking behavior, particularly among smokers? And this is a question that, in terms of specific patio exposure, has not really been studied. To do that, we're using the Ontario Tobacco Survey. This is a survey conducted out of OTRU of 4,500 Ontario smokers over the period 2005 to 2011. We actually limited for this study, limited the time period to after the implementation of the Smoke-Free Ontario Act, so that which restricted smoking indoors in all bars and restaurants and workplaces. So at least theoretically, there's no indoor smoking for the period of this study. And we followed these smokers every 6 months for up to 3 years. So it's a longitudinal study. We're following people's behavior over time. The survey also included a cross-sectional component, which included included 3,000 non-smokers over the period of the study, but we didn't follow the non-smokers up over time. And we're asking three specific questions. Are the correlates of being exposed to smoking on patio? Among smokers and non-smokers, is exposure to smoking on a patio associated with making a quit attempt among smokers only? And is the risk of relapse greater among those exposed to smoking on patios among those trying to quit? So within the population of smokers, there was a group who were in the process of making quit attempts. And so we looked specifically at that subpopulation to ask this question. So in terms of correlates, one of the things that came out that was perhaps not surprising is that smoke exposure was much higher in the summer than it was in the winter. For whatever reason, people, I think, like to be on patios more in the summertime months, as I think we can all appreciate. But there were also a number of other differences in terms of smoke exposure, both among smokers and non-smokers. So this is a graph of the percentage exposed to smoke on a patio. So so you have to go to a patio and be exposed to smoke, report in the past 30 days overall. So this is not controlled for seasonality. So the first correlate here is with age. And we see that among that exposure to smoke on a patio in the past 30 days is actually extraordinarily high among young adults. Among young adult smokers. Oh, right. The red bars here are smokers, and the blue bars are non-smokers. Looks like that got cut off a bit. So the red are smokers, the blue are non-smokers, and we see generally that smokers have higher levels of exposure to smoke on a patio than non-smokers, as would likely be expected. But we see in young adults that for both smokers and both smokers and non-smokers, that we do see significant levels of past month exposure. And remember, this is not controlled for seasonality. So in the summertime, you expect it's a huge potential intervention among young adults in particular. We also do see, as likely would be expected, a declining level of exposure as people get older and probably are less likely to go out to bars and restaurants. Males, both among smokers and non-smokers, are more likely to be exposed to smoke. And there is a trend, particularly among non-smokers, that those who have completed college or had more education are actually more likely to be exposed. What's really interesting here is that for non-smokers, there are very few people who are exposed to smoke on patios. It's one of the few good sides, I guess, for low SES in terms of health effects. But among smokers, we see that they are going to patios and they are being exposed to patios, even though there's a dramatic difference between within this group that we don't quite see in the same way among the higher SES groups. There's also a slight association among smokers for people in the GTA had reported higher levels of being exposed to smoke on patios at the times of the study, and less in the east, which would be expected as Ottawa and some other, and Kingston, I think at the time, had a patio smoking regulation. Yeah, it's people with that level of education. So then we looked at, this is a slide about quit attempts. So we looked at whether or not going to or being exposed to smoking was associated with making a quit attempt among smokers only. Does the line show up? No. There was a line here at one. So for this particular analysis, levels of less than one reflect that people would be less likely to make a quit attempt. So what we saw in our analysis among the OTS is that people who visited a patio were less likely to make a quit attempt. However, statistically significant. However, there was no statistical difference between those who were exposed to smoking on patios and those who were not exposed. Then from here, we took a look at the third aspect, which is looking at relapse among smokers. And I just wanted to highlight the design of the study again, because it was a limited sample that we chose in order to make sure that the time effect was clear, so that the order of being exposed to patio smoke and making a quit attempt and quitting was all in the proper order to make an attempt at a causal inference. So at the time period one, the person had to be a current smoker. At time period two, we assessed whether or not this person actually had to be a non-current smoker, so they had to have been making a quit attempt that had lasted for more than 30 days. So if they were smoking, or if they had smoked in the past 30 days, but even were making a quit attempt, those people were excluded. At this same point, we also asked about patio exposure in the past 30 days, whether or not they'd been to a patio, and whether or not they'd been exposed to smoking on that patio. And then subsequently, we looked in future surveys to see if that exposure was associated with differences in in length and time to relapse. So we use a survival analysis. So that if people were more likely to have to relapse at a faster rate. So for this analysis, levels over 1 suggest an increased risk of relapse. So it's people who, those who have a higher levels are more likely to relapse. So they're more likely to go back to smoking. And this analysis and also the quit attempts one are also controlled. This is an adjusted numbers that are controlling for all sorts of covariates associated with smoking, age, sex, seasonality, marital status, number of children, self-rated health, education, and so on. And what we found here is that people who were exposed to smoking on patios were significantly more likely, this is about a 65% increase in risk of relapse, than those smokers in the general population. So against the people who didn't go to bars or restaurants or had gone but didn't actually go to a patio at the time, which is the majority of the smoking population. What's different about this analysis compared to the quit attempt, though, is that we actually see a significant difference between those who visited a patio but were not exposed to smoking and those who were exposed to smoking and had been on a patio. So here the difference was not about visiting a patio, but about being actually exposed to the smoke itself. And that difference is actually about 2.5 times more likely to quit in the future having been exposed to the smoke. Now, we're missing a title here, but the intent is obvious. One of the things we think is associated with relapse, and we know to be associated with relapse, is alcohol use. And certainly, as we've seen from the picture before and from our own experience, is that alcohol use and smoking relapse and smoking behavior in general are highly correlated. We didn't measure alcohol use specifically in this survey, so we can't look at that association directly. One thing, though, want to point out is that this analysis, by the design of it, it didn't actually look at relapse that happened at the patio itself. So people who had gone to a patio, started drinking, and then subsequently relapsed to smoking, those people would not have been included in the study at all because they wouldn't have been, they wouldn't have made it, been not smoking at the time of the survey. That effect of alcohol is not included, and it's probably suggests that there's sort of an additional effect that may be associated from alcohol and also the exposure directly. Furthermore, what we see is this difference between quit attempts and a risk of relapse. So we see an effect of fewer quit attempts that are associated with visiting patios. So we don't see a difference about smoke exposure. This may be an effect perhaps associated with alcohol or the experience of being on patios that is associated with less likelihood of in being interested in quitting. But the patio or the smoking itself, beyond just being on a patio or being in a place where you're likely to have alcohol, such as a bar or a restaurant, the smoking and being exposed to smoke was associated with the increased risk of relapse. This is slightly different from the previous studies of indoor use. One of the reasons that we think that smoking on a patio may influence people's smoking behavior is actually the visual cues associated with people smoking. It's important to note that we actually measured exposure to smoking not in terms of physical exposure, but just in terms of reported exposure. So this could have been sight, it could have been smell, it could have been actual exposure to the smoke, but people did have to notice it. So we know that smoking and visual cues are an important part of the relapse process. And in fact, we know that that visual cues and other sensory cues are an important part of the addiction process, that we know that, that nicotine really mediates experiences and relies on these cues in part for to create the addictiveness of cigarettes. And so people seeing these cues in places like patios or being in places where they expect there to be smoking is likely one of the potential mechanisms that we're seeing in play here. And this measurement of smoking on patios and the exposure of smoking on patios may just be one source of social exposure to smoke that may influence relapse among smokers in many different venues. So this is a fairly new area, and to answer that question is that there is very little research about relapse for social exposure to cigarettes in terms of patios and for other outdoor spaces. The other thing to note about this study is that we didn't measure an intervention effect. We didn't see a change in the regulations during this period of time for most people. This was about the experience of people who chose to go to these different places. And there may be somewhat different effects when a regulation is imposed. That may have a stronger effect, perhaps, on social norms, which we see are more associated with quit attempts. So in conclusion, we see through the study that exposure to smoking on a patio is associated with changes in smoking behavior, particularly risk of relapse, and that this exposure to smoking is potentially an important public health effect and an important side effect of reducing physical exposure to smoke that would be accomplished through regulations of smoking on patios. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Michael. It was really informative, as well as Roberta. And I want to encourage anyone who has some questions to please type them into onto their page there. And we'll start with a question that came in for Roberta. In the study cited, the range of PM 2.5 out of M cubed is huge. When do we know the SES is dangerous?
Hi. Good question. According to the Surgeon General's report, there is no safe level. And as I mentioned, anything up to about 25 is considered more or less acceptable, but can still affect vulnerable people. But once you get beyond that, so most of these readings were beyond that, and a lot of them were way, way beyond that. So we have a major problem here.
Okay, thank you. Jewel Bailey has posed a question for you, Michael. Referring to your slide with the good news, is it that people who are in low socioeconomic sectors are not visiting places with patios that they have such low exposure?
I think that's part of the mechanism here. So non-smokers who have less than high school education, so if people who are of lower levels of education, were very unlikely to visit patios if they were non-smokers. So that's likely because not necessarily visiting the bars or spending extra money at bars and restaurants in general. And so wouldn't be consequently exposed.
Okay, great. I have another question for you. So from Nancy Bradshaw, do we have data to compare relapse rates for smokers exposed to smoking on patios versus other outdoor spaces?
I talked a little bit about this. I'm not sure. Roberta, do you know if we have exposure on relapse for exposure to smoke in other places?
I'm not aware, but we do have data from a few years ago in our CAMH adult survey where we asked people if they had relapsed at some point during a certain period and where they were when they relapsed or what did they think led to the relapse. and a lot of them said they were drinking, and a lot of them said other people were smoking. We did actually ask, I think we also asked about the location, but I'm not sure. I don't recall those data, but there seems to be some evidence, but we'd have to do a search on that one to see if there are studies looking at other venues or private spaces where, if you're going to relapse, you've got to relapse somewhere. So what you really want to see is how many people relapse at home, how many when they're out with friends, and et cetera. But we do know that alcohol and being with other smokers are certainly trigger relapse. And possibly seeing other media or advertising or packages in stores that we used to have and so forth, where there's a little bit of data on that.
Our knowledge on social smoking and exposure to social sources of smoking and their effect on relapse is really an emerging area. We have good evidence associated with close social sources, such as parents or friends. We also have good evidence associated with a change in social norms and change in exposures associated with effective changing indoor laws. So we know that when we've changed indoor exposure visibility, that we have an effect. We're just moving beyond, I guess. We've spent a lot of time and energy invested in understanding and regulating indoor smoking, and that we're now starting to learn about what the implications are for outdoor smoking and smoking in other areas.
Great. We have a few more questions posed for both of you. Having all these research results, why do we still see people smoking at the hospital doorways?
It's a good question. Did Pam Kaufman's study look about why people were smoking in doorways?
Well, I assume they smoke in doorways because they can. In places where they've banned it and enforced the ban, they don't smoke in doorways. So, but it's convenient, and their friends hang out there, and they only have so many minutes for their break, so that's. And they're smokers. That's why they do it. But so we really need to. I'm not exactly sure. A lot of hospitals have banned smoking on all their property, but it's not province wide, as far as I know. So that's something we need to work on, because it not only causes a lot of physical exposure, but there's a lot of social exposure.
Okay, great. So we have also a question about electronic cigarettes. Roberta, were you talking about vapor in general, or from only cigarettes, e-cigarettes that have nicotine, or all e-cigarettes?
Is that the Heather Celine? if it's a Heather Celine, I know. Hi. I'm talking about all e-cigarettes. E-cigarettes produce, it's not just plain water vapor. As people think of water vapor as being very pure, there are chemicals used in e-cigarettes, propylene glycol, and there may be other things that are formed. I know they certainly can detect acrolein, which is a carcinogen, and there are other carcinogens. Certainly at lower levels than you'd find in cigarettes, but there are carcinogens, and I don't think... now, the nicotine is an added problem, but there would be some carcinogens even without the nicotine. And in the past few years, there's new evidence showing that just having nicotine floating in the air without any there are particulates from these e-cigarettes, and actually... there's work been done that shows that they fall to the ground, because I think they're heavy in these droplets, and so you get a pool of stuff on the floor of these, and they include heavy metals too that are hazardous. But nicotine itself, and this is why you really don't want indoor or even outdoor electronic cigarettes being used, that nicotine has a whole lot of health effects that people don't seem to talk about, except me. Certainly for pregnant women, if they're exposed to air nicotine, it has an effect on the fetus, which can include predisposing it to diabetes and obesity, hearing loss. There's various other health problems from that. And nicotine now is known to combine with nitrous acid, which is something that you find in a lot of indoor environments. I don't know quite whether it happens outdoors, but you know, it can float inside from patios and it forms new carcinogens. So nicotine basically contains tobacco-specific carcinogens. You don't just need the smoke for that. So you really don't want people smoking e-cigarettes around you either. I don't know if that fully answers your question, but there's a lot of research being done on it, and you know, 3 or 4 years from now we'll have the results from the more on the chemistry. There's also, of course, problems with, you've probably read about some of these, with small children drinking these nicotine liquids, and you know, it can kill an adult actually if you have a teaspoon, according to Neil Benowitz, who is one of the leaders in the field.
Great, so that's really informative. Heather had another quick question related to that. If there are any studies out of California about the impact of outdoor smoking bans on youth quitting and relapse?
I haven't seen any, but I won't say no. it's certainly possible. What there are a number of studies are where they don't differentiate necessarily between indoor and outdoor smoking. So they talk about the impact of changes of regulations associated with bars and restaurants, and there may or may not be patios included in those regulations. But so there are studies that look at the overall impact of banning smoking in bars and restaurants, and some of those do include patio areas and some of those do not, and some of those include outdoors areas because there are very few patios. That's where most of the research has been focused on.
Great. Monica wanted to point out that Ontario's Bill 131 includes the banning of tobacco on patios, and to remind everyone to tell your MPs to pass this bill quickly. You can go to takeaction.cancer.ca, and I believe they also ban smoking on hospital properties. So any other questions? I can see that we have a few more minutes, and someone had asked if you could tell us a little bit more about the OTS.
Sure. So the Ontario Tobacco Survey is what the data set that we use for this, and we're at O2 are looking to use this survey to answer a whole range of questions about smoking and smoking cessation in Ontario. If you're interested in more of the results about smoking cessation, and particularly on a population level and the association with policies and other interventions that have taken place over the last number of years, you can take a look at the O2 website, www.otru.org, and there is an OTS update on smoking on patios as well. And there are a number coming out. If you're not signed up to our mailing list, you should. Where can we? Is it on the web? On the O2 website, where we provide monthly updates on some of the current abstracts and on tobacco issues from Ontario relevant, Canadian relevant, and some of the work that we're putting out.
Okay, great. I want to just remind everyone that we are going to have this recording accessed, and we're making this available, and we'll provide those in a follow-up email. And both Roberta and Michael have shared their email addresses here if you want to contact them after today's webinar. Heather's just sent in one more question, and we do have a few more minutes. So if you could tell us, Roberta, are you measuring PM 2.5 with a side pad?
Yes, we are, Heather. We've been using the side pack for a few years because it's a standardized measure. We have done some previous work with some other expensive equipment, but we switched to the side pack for the most recent patio study.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I'd really like to thank everyone who joined our session today, and a special thank you to our two guest presenters for their valuable contributions. As we said, we're also sending an email containing a link to an evaluation survey. If everyone could kindly take a few moments to complete the evaluation, it would be appreciated because that input helps us improve our webinars and host future learning opportunities to meet your needs. So we want to thank you again for joining our session today, and I hope that spring weather so that we can enjoy hopefully smoke-free patios is right around the corner. Thanks and have a great day.